Welcome to the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast. Whether your family has been on this journey for years or you're just getting started, we're here to support and encourage you along the way. And now your hosts, Lynette Ezell and Tara Melber.
Welcome back. You've often heard me share about as our family grew from 3 children to 6 children through the gift of adoption. And I don't know that I've talked a lot about how we had to change our parenting style. And so Kevin and I quickly began to realize that the way that our parents parented us and that we had taken that into raising our first 3 children didn't always work when we'd grown to a family that had 6 children that came from different backgrounds. And so sometimes we had to stand back and say, let's regroup here. Let's try this another way. And what works for one child is not necessarily working for another. So that brings us to our guests today that bring a wealth of information to this topic. And we are just excited to hear what they have learned through this process of fostering and adoption.
Ryan and Kayla have been married for 16 years, and they have 6 kids ranging in age from 15 all the way down to 5, 4 of whom were adopted out of the foster care system, but they've been foster parents for quite some time and fostered many other children. They also have led Tapestry Adoption and Foster Care Ministry in Irving, Texas, along with Empowered to Connect for over 4 years. They are podcast people and have a podcast called Empowered Parent Podcast, which I follow on a regular basis.
Ditto.
And they have a website called onebighappyhome.com. So many of the resources and things that you might want to know about them, you'll be able to find in those places when we're done here today. So welcome, Ryan and Kayla.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good to be on with you guys.
So we'd love for you just to start out and kind of tell us your story about how you got involved in this space.
Oh, she's pointing to me.
She is.
Yeah, so when we got married, we found out that both of our families, there was this kind of this culture of adoption foster care. Kayla's one set of grandparents were foster parents, and my dad was not officially adopted, but he was raised by his aunt and uncle. He was not raised by his mom and by his birth parents. So there was this idea of welcoming kids in that weren't born to you that ran through both of our families. And so Kayla nannied to pay her way through college. And so she just adores children. And I thought, if I can just get to like our second wedding anniversary without being a parent,
it'll be a miracle.
I feel like I'd feel like I'd done something. You know what I mean? So what I did was I came up with a very clever plan. I said, hey, you know what would be great? If we went back to South Africa together and you met all of my extended family before we had kids, because that's a really difficult trip with children. And she said, yes. And I was like, yes. And so we went, and then like literally the day we got back, the plane landed, and she's like, okay, we need to make some decisions. I'm like, I'm jet lagged, can I just go to sleep? But I think it was like 2 days after we got back, we went to an information meeting, became foster parents, got licensed, and then our first placement was our daughter, who's now 13. She was 4 months old when she was placed with us. And so we were kind of blissfully going along in that space. And around about that time, Michael Monroe and Amy Monroe had connected with Dr. Karen Purvis and her work at TCU and created something called Empower to Connect. And mm-hmm. So when they piloted that class, Michael called us and said, hey, do you guys want to be part of the group? And so this next detail, everybody always gets jealous when they hear this, but back then Karen used to come to class.
Mm. Oh, so, I am jealous, you're right, I admit it.
And so the first hour of the last class, she did nurture group with the kids. Our two oldest still remember her and called her the bubblegum lady. And then she sat in class with us the second half of class and just kind of talked through some struggles at home. And so we then committed coming out of that, because I'll be honest and say that I wasn't on board. I'm like, this sounds like too many hugs for me.
You know, right.
How's this preparing kids to the real world? And Kayla's like, I really think we should try this. And so I said, okay. And so we decided that in order to keep ourselves honest, we were gonna journal and then, you know, at that time blogs were becoming kind of like, you know, the online journal thing, and we did that, and some of our stuff was read, and then Michael asked us if we'd write for Empower to Connect, and then got involved with the ministry, and here we sit in lovely Georgia kind of talking about it. But that's the real short version of it. Did I miss any high points?
No, that sounds right. About right.
So when your first placement came home, your little girl, and she was 4 months old, and then not too long later, then you received a placement of a four-year-old. Is that right?
Yeah, he was almost four. It was just a few months shy of his fourth birthday. And, you know, when we brought home an infant straight from the NICU, we just really didn't think we needed a lot of different parenting tools, right? We were still kind of in the, we had the misconception that we didn't have trauma because our child came home to us from the hospital.
So early, right?
So it was really when we brought our son home that we went, oh my goodness.
Yes.
You know, I mean, later on, we would see how trauma impacted our child that we brought home as an infant, but it was really very clear when we brought home this almost four-year-old little boy who, you know, had been in foster care for a couple of years and really challenged us as, you know, as far as parenting went.
Don't you feel like when you're faced with those situations where you're looking at the behaviors and I've heard you all say it's not just a four-year-old fit, but it's a really different four-year-old fit. And
oh, yeah.
Increased frequency, increased duration. And you think, man, I really don't think I've got the skill set here to be able to do this well. And many times when people get in those situations, that's when they start to say, oh, man, I've got to figure out something different, a different way of parenting.
Yeah.
So did you feel like so when we're talking about trauma-based parenting, did you feel like Ryan did in that, wow, this seems like permissive parenting or lots of rainbows and hugs or whatever? did you feel that way when you first sat through some of those initial trainings?
You know, it's funny because I think we were at a place that I knew what we were doing wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time we heard about Empowered to Connect, we realized that what we were doing wasn't working. And so I was like ready to jump full on board with anything different than what we were doing because what we were doing was failing miserably. I had to pull him along a little more. But I think, you know, I think it was, you know, 3 or 4 weeks into our class that he kind of started going, okay, maybe I could see how this would help, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, credit to you, though. I think you recognized way before I did that we needed help because I was of the mindset, well, just, you know, we haven't been parenting this little guy long enough. But I think that we had a real moment with Kayla sitting outside of his bedroom door just weeping one night and saying, I don't know how to help him.
Oh.
I really don't know how to help him. And you know, and providentially, it was probably like a week after that we got the call and said, hey, we're piloting this program. Will you guys go through it with us and give you feedback and see what you think? And it was during that I think the thing that really kind of hooked me in that is when we started talking about the risk factors that are outlined in the connected child. And we get, you know, the first three, because I was like, you know, we were in the same boat thinking that our daughter that we brought home at 4 months was probably the easiest scenario that we could think of because she wouldn't have memories of other people and all those kinds of things. And then coming to understand the relationship that a mom has with her child, you know, in utero, and coming to understand all the prenatal risk factors and the early medical trauma and that kind of stuff. It was very, very eye-opening to me when I learned that, you know, she may have real difficulty processing her history because she doesn't have any explicit memories. Mm-hmm. They're all implicit. Right. And so to me, that was really kind of the thing that got me going, oh, okay, yeah, now this is teaching me something that I didn't know. And, you know, when she, honestly did drag me into it. That's I said, like, if we're gonna do this, we're going to have to be all in or all out. And so, you know, it's the only way we parent at home. Our bio kids, our adopted kids, it doesn't really matter because, you know, keep trying to keep up with the different parenting styles.
It's like,
trying to lie to 10 people. At some point, somebody's going to figure you out, right?
So. True. So after you said that you had parented this way you committed to parenting this way for 12 months.
Yeah.
So as the 12 months went by, you really were hooked.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw huge differences just not only in our kids' behaviors, but in our reactions to those behaviors, because we began to realize that some of it was the way we were reacting. Some of it was based on our own history.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we dove into that and realized that it was just dramatic increase increase in, I don't know, in the calmness in our home and in the just ability to get through those hard times, because there were still lots of hard times. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were still, you know, meltdowns, and there were still lying and all of these things that were happening. But our ability to get through those things and come out content on the other side was much better.
Well, that's why we ended up calling the blog One Big Happy Home, which was her idea again. This feels like it's the Give Kayla Credit episode. Which was her idea, because I think we felt like there was some happiness in our home that we had just really been struggling, and it didn't feel like a very happy place. It just felt like a place, like a combat zone constantly. But then there were these little cracks, and light started coming in, and so that's where One Big Happy Home comes from. But I can still remember the moments where it kind of hooked me. Our son, I'd get home from work, and I don't know what you guys are like and what your audience is like, but I really need to connect with my wife to kind of feel like I'm reintegrating into the home. Like, it's very, very important to me. So what that means, like a hug, a kiss, talk for 5 minutes, because I really feel like that's sort of me getting back home, right? And so we're standing in the kitchen at the house we lived in at the time, and it had a sliding glass door out into the backyard. And I'd just gotten home, and the door opened, and our son came in, and I said, "Hey, bud." And he's like, "Hey." And he went back outside. And then he came back in like 30 seconds later because he needed water. And then he came back 30 seconds later because he needed the bathroom. And then he needed to get a baseball. And then he needed to get a baseball glove. And then he needed a baseball bat. And now the dogs couldn't do the baseball, so he had to get a tennis ball. Like every minute. And my annoyance, because I haven't had my 5 minutes with Kayla, and I said, "Dude, just stay outside. And, just stay outside for like 30 minutes. Can you play for 30 minutes? And he kind of looked at me real sad. Went outside and came back 2 minutes later because, you know, now he needed a football or something. And so we went back to class. And so the question was like, you know, tell us about your week. And so I tell the story. And Michael said to me, "Look, I want you to try something for me. So when you get home tomorrow and your son does that, instead of telling him everything's okay, you need to play outside, get out on his level and say, 'Look, I understand that you're just checking that mom and dad are here. And we're not going anywhere, bud. And you know what? You don't have to believe me. You can come inside anytime you want to check.'" And then he came back inside about 30 minutes later.
Wow. Mm.
And I thought, oh my gosh, that was so counterintuitive.
Yes.
But it worked immediately. And I'm like, okay, you know what? Caleb, I'll try these things because that worked for me. So
I can almost remember where I was standing in our house when I realized, we were still in Kentucky at the time, probably had 5 children by then, had not added the 6, when it hit me, the way I was raised is not going to work. Mm.
Yeah.
Here.
Right.
This no longer works. And I think Tara handed me a copy of Empowered to Connect, or The Connected Child, and my life turned on a dime.
Yeah.
And that's when things started, you know, lots of prayer, because I spent a lot of nights with my nose down in the carpet asking God to heal from the head to the toes, heal the mind, heal the pain, heal the scars.
Yeah.
And my child was just 3 at the time. Mm-hmm. So I just remember, almost like you, Ron, where I was when it hit me.
My mom remembers what she was doing when news broke that Elvis had died.
Yes.
Like, she will still tell you, I was ironing, I was watching TV, because when news broke, it was like evening news in South Africa, right? Because it's like 6-hour time difference. And she said, I was ironing in front of the TV and they interrupted with the news that Elvis Presley had died. And I said, what did you do? She said, I just put the iron down, sat on the floor and cried.
Yeah. I had just gotten tomatoes out of the garden. That was my job. I'm going to age my, and it was so hot that day, and I'll never forget it. Right. Yeah.
Because there are these big moments.
There are.
That are just ingrained in your mind. And man, that book was so, so transformative for us too, because it was just all of a sudden, these things that I didn't understand, somebody had explained to me. Mm-hmm. And somebody said, look, it matters that that child feels safe. It matters that you connect in relationship. And you know, she did good work.
Yeah. I think one of the biggest things for me when I read that was knowing that, you know, with our first 3 bio kids, that I had heard so much that if you don't get them in the first 5 formidable years, that you're kind of, they're lost. Mm-hmm. And all of ours, well, 2 of the 3 of ours came home older than that. And I thought, wow, how are they ever going to be okay if I didn't have them the first 5 years? David and I weren't able to pour into them. And so to be able to hear the research behind the fact that the brain is moldable, and that, and we all know that because the word says that. So why I was listening to something else tell me, you know, that this is, you know, they were doomed from the get-go. But it was an encouragement to me to say, Tara, remember, there, you can't take the Lord out of it. He is the restorer of all. But I can help empower you and give you the tools that you need, you and David together, to be able to pour into these kids and to train them up in the way that they should go. And so it was a big deal for us as well to know how we were raised was not going to work with these extras, with our new ones that were joining our families.
I'm glad you mentioned Paul there, because I think for too long, when we read about being transformed by the renewing of your mind, that I think that was sort of like, I always thought about that as like philosophical, like your ideas could change. But what if Paul actually meant that your physical brain could be renewed? Because science in the last 10 years is telling me that your physical brain can be renewed. And for the longest time, we just thought that meant like your ideas can change, how you think about things can change. But it literally means that your brain can be transformed. I don't know if you guys have read the Whole Brain Child, written by Dan Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson. Years ago, we had Tina come speak at the conference. And, you know, the No Drama Discipline had just come out. And so she was speaking, and so it's at a conference for Christian ministry in a church, and people were getting really kind of antsy. So every time there was a break, there was like a day-long workshop she did. Every time there's a break, people would come up to me and say, she hasn't mentioned the Bible. She hasn't mentioned the Bible. You need to get her to mention the Bible. And I thought, well, Tina's a lovely woman who loves the Lord, but that's not what her work's based on, right? So she's up there talking about her work. And so I'm like, how do I tell this person who at the time occupied positions 1 and 2 on the New York Times bestseller list for her book to tell her she needs to change her presentation? So we came back from a break and I said, isn't it great that science has finally caught up to the Bible? Because 2,000 years ago, Paul told me about the renewing of your mind, and she's up here telling you that the brain's malleable. And it's the same thing.
Right.
And you could see people like go, and right. Nobody pushed back on her work again, because we don't think about it in those terms, right? And whatever avenue the Lord chooses to use to bring healing in people's lives, I think I have to have enough humility and enough faith to accept that God can do whatever he wants to, and he can use whoever he wants to, and he can bring healing about however he wants to. And the best that I can do is say, I'm willing to be used. And then that's the best we got.
Right. So, Ryan, I have a question for you. Oftentimes, like when you were talking about the fact that Kayla kind of bought into these principles a little bit ahead of you, oftentimes I feel like moms are a little more touchy-feely, tend to be a little bit more nurturing, not that you're not, but and dads tend to be more of the authoritative kind of parenting. So how can you speak to dads about even just considering looking into doing something like this that's a little bit unconventional?
Well, I think that it addresses an issue that I had to really kind of struggle with, and that is that if you're going to lead your family, you need to consider what is best for your family. You need to be willing to embrace new ideas, because so many times, we hear from men who say, my wife has taken over the leadership of our family. And I always respond the same way. No, I think you've allowed that. And so I really want to challenge dads in saying that, if you want what's best for your family, you have to consider all of the options. You have to have the humility to say that I may not be right, because I didn't have that at first. I had the idea of, he hasn't been in the family long enough. But I think it does take a level of humility to say what I am doing is not working. And it takes a level of humility to say, I need help. And I struggled with asking for help. But what I've come to understand is that asking for help doesn't prove you're weak. It proves that you're smart. Like, I think it's evidence that you're smart. You recognize I need shoring up in this level area of my life. And I need to do what's best for my kids. I need to do what's best for my wife. Because embracing trust-based parenting for me personally was not just transformative for my children. It was transformative in my marriage. It was what was good for them. It was good for my wife. She homeschools those kids. And if we're not creating an environment of felt safety where she can actually thrive and reach them and educate them instead of constant struggles and battles and chasing kids who are running off and you know what I'm talking about, right? So I feel like I don't only have a responsibility to my children to consider if what we're doing is working and then embrace these things that make relationship important. I have that responsibility to my wife as well. And so I think that, you know, men, we need to have the humility to question if what we're doing is in the best interest of our family. I think we have to have the humility to question, are we effectively leading our families? And the answer a lot of the time is no. And then you have to not be defensive about that. You have to receive that gentle rebuke, and then you have to figure out how to do it better, because at the end of the day, it is my responsibility to my wife, and it is my responsibility to my children to do whatever I can to create an environment of felt safety where they can grow and heal and hope can come back to our home. And I think that that is my duty to them before the Lord. And I have to take that as seriously as that statement implies it needs to be taken.
And I think as a woman, you say, I know maybe all three of us, all three families here could agree that we've all had to stop and say, I mean, the Lord's built our families in unconventional mm-hmm. ways, okay, all three of our families. And there comes a time where you have to stop and say, I believe you do. There's no shame in saying, we got to regroup here.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is not just what you were saying, mm-hmm. Kayla, you know, and Ryan, what we were raised to do mm-hmm. or how we saw our parents' marriage, or, you know, even though it was great, this is not working here. We've got to regroup. When my husband does that in our home,
right,
I have so much respect for him because I need his leadership. And when he says, Lynn, this isn't working this way this time. Okay. We have six kids. They've all launched differently and they're all going to launch mm-hmm. differently, or they're all going to make different choices in life. We all have that constant of, we love the Lord. We pray together. We seek him, train in their hearts. Right. But they all come from different places in life. Mm-hmm. And so when my husband says, we're going to stop and evaluate this decision and how we've been doing things as a woman,
it's a game changer.
It is
for me
a
too.
Game changer. You're right.
And you know, we talk about our kids needing felt safety, but it makes me feel felt safety
right.
when I can kind of, you know, feel like I'm underneath that wing of David's just protection and objectivity. Sometimes when I feel a little bit out of control with, oh my word, I'm trying to stuff the next 15 years into today.
Yes.
And he says, okay, hang tight, because we're going to look at things a little differently. So I do appreciate that. And I feel like our husbands, when they take that leadership role, it does allow that felt safety for the entire family.
Yes,
which I think is my responsibility. But you said something, Lynette, that I completely agree with, and that is that at this table, I would imagine, from what everything that's been said, I know it's true in our home, and it's in truth a lot of the families we work with, that mom has that humble moment way before dad does, where mom realizes we need help way before dad does, because dad's like, no, we got this. And it is a question of humility, I think, to be able to say, I need help, and to say what we're doing isn't working. And we just visited a church last week, and they were preaching on Ephesians 5, which I know, I mean, when people do weddings, the bride half of the time says, can we not do that Ephesians 5 stuff? And so I don't know about half of the time. I know there have been weddings that I have performed where the bride has said, can we not include that? But they preached on it, and the week before that preached on the passage in kind of the parallel passage in 1 Peter. And he said, you know, men will come to me and say, Pastor, my wife's not submitting to me. And he said, are you loving her well?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, a lot of times we look at those verses in the Bible and try to go and really focus on what the other person's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, no, if you really want an environment in your home where, like you said, Tara, that you feel comfortable and safe under the wing, that is my responsibility to my family. And all of the goodness that God wants for our marriage and our family comes out of the place where the dad says, I want that for my family. Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately I didn't have the chronological or spiritual maturity to realize that 10 years ago. But I hope I do now, because I think it's really, really important. But, you know, part of the peace and the happiness in our home doesn't just come from the kids healing from their trauma. It comes from us healing from our own, and it comes from us connecting better in relationship. And, you know, we were talking earlier today about, over the years, the amount of arguments Kayla and I have had declined. Over the years, conversations with aggravated tones of voice have declined. And it's all because we're in this together. And when we're in something together, right, there's copious amounts of research on this, that if you have somebody who's with you and says, I'm in the foxhole mm-hmm. with you, we can do this. amazing things happen born out of that reality. And I think that dads have that responsibility to their families to say to their wives, yes, this doesn't make sense to me. And I will just go along with your intuitiveness with children, because that's what happened with us. Mm-hmm. You're good with kids. I'm not. So I'll be willing to embrace this. And really just take up that mantle of leadership and say, you know what, this is unconventional, but I've heard it work. There's enough families out there that will testify that it works. And just say, you know what, I embrace that. I want that for our family. Let's let the healing begin.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Well, thanks so much, guys. We appreciate you being here with us today. Look forward to more resources coming down the pike from your website. And so we appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
You have been listening to The Adopting and Fostering Home, a resource of the North American Mission Board. For more information about today's podcast and other relevant resources, visit sendrelief.org.